I'm guessing you've heard about invasive carp and how much they could really change the Great Lakes if they make it up here. But did you know?
When you try their meat, it actually is rather tasty.
If you can't beat them, eat them. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan wildlife managers and the state's outdoor recreation industries are really worried about invasive carp species, and with reason. Just look at the impact that carp have had on the Mississippi River. Michigan and several adjacent states have spent millions of dollars to mitigate this threat. But is there something more that we could be doing to reduce the carp populations, maybe even before they get here? Today, we're talking about a new effort to rebrand those pesky and totally delicious carp. Reporter Keith Matheny of the Detroit Free Press recently wrote about this. Hey, Keith, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So wildlife biologists and others have been sounding the alarm about the onset of Asian carp to the Great Lakes for some time now, but it's not actually here yet, correct?
It is not. It is knocking on the door, though. They have found actual Asian carp that have made it through all the various electric barriers and different deterrents that they have within 20-some miles of the Lake Michigan. And they have found the DNA of different species of Asian carp in a creek right in Chicago, just knocking on the door of Lake Michigan. They didn't find any actual fish in that case, but they found their DNA, which means they're around somewhere close.
So your article goes into the exploring the possibility of the Asian carp as a culinary delicacy. Why hasn't carpus cuisine been a thing up to this point?
When you talk to people who have been pushing this effort, they say that it's the four-letter word carp that's really holding back particularly like North American customers. In Asia, these types of carp are eaten with frequency, and they're known to be a pretty tasty fish. In America, there's kind of a stigma of carp as a sort of muddy, bottom-feeding a fish that you can sort of taste that in the meat. The species of invasive carp that are making their way towards the Great Lakes aren't actually feeders like that. They feed on plankton, not off the bottom. And when you try their meat, it actually is rather tasty.
Well, that was my next question. I mean, some freshwater fish make such great eating. I mean, I'll never say no to a walleye or perch fillet, but full disclosure, I am not a huge fan of catfish unless it's deep fried and served with a gigantic dollop of comeback sauce. So did you get a chance to try it yourself, actually? What does it taste like?
I have actually had an Asian carp burger, and that is one of the kind of main ways that people have been cooking it. Is grinding up the meat. One of the other kind of drawbacks to this fish is it has tiny little, they're called pin bones in the fillets, and they're very fine and very small. They're actually edible. I mean, you could just eat right through them. But for the North American palate, it's a little disconcerting. So when I ate my Asian carp burger, I thought it was very tasty. I thought it sort of has a salmon feel to it to me. And I'm told from chefs that it's kind of a neutral meat that will take on any sort of flavoring you want to give it, like, say, a teriyaki or a barbecue or something spicy. It's sort of a palette or like an artist's canvas for different flavors.
That's a compliment we usually reserve for tofu. Okay, so you can grind up the fish. Definitely, that's one option. Did you find any chefs or home cooks who had other ideas for preparation of Asian carp?
Well, I talked to some restaurateurs who say you can learn to fillet these fish and remove those pin bones, and then the opportunities are really endless for what you do with it.
Right. Has commercial carp fishing caught on in the Mississippi Basin where the carp's already rampant?
It's been going on for probably since the very early 1990s. Now, the earliest efforts in that regard were the state of Illinois contracting fishermen saying, get these fish out of the Mississippi River system. not necessarily fishermen going out and doing it because they saw a big market and a big profit possibility. So the state has been contracting these fishermen to go out and get as many of these fish out of the water as they can. And that's actually been quite successful in holding the fish back in their push closer and closer to Lake Michigan. I talked to one fisherman who said back in those early days they were catching, you know, fish up to 70 pounds, and now they're catching fish that were that are like, you know, 3 to 10 pounds, 3 to 15 pounds. And that's because they just got the big honking fish out of the water through their efforts, and the fish that are there now are younger and smaller.
That sounds like it'll pass for good news.
For all of us who don't want them in the Great Lakes, absolutely. Now, since that time that the state has been contracting with fishermen to get these out of there, talking about the state of Illinois here, they've also been increasingly finding markets for these fish, be it as a bait fish. I guess they're really useful for like crab and lobster bait. They're being used in pet food. And more, they're just starting to find, you know, human consumption opportunities.
Huh. What's the urgency of making this push happen right now? I feel like I've been hearing about the threat of Asian carp for decades.
Well, again, they're getting closer and closer based on the evidence. Plans are in the works right now for an almost $800 million Asian carp barrier at a place called the Brandon Road Lock and Dam. That's on the Des Plaines River in Joliet, Illinois, just to the west of Chicago, about 40 miles from Lake Michigan. And there they're going to include like electricity, unappealing sounds, and gates of rising bubbles that they hope will, you know, hold the fish back and make them not want to pass through. However, that project is probably 7-8 years away. So the idea behind this push for marketing the fish and in turn hopefully getting more fishermen out there catching them is that old-fashioned concept of just removing the fish by fishing might buy us some time until these more sophisticated blocking measures are in place.
Keith, where would be an obvious place for commercial Asian carp fisheries to be sited? I know that a lot of the mitigation action to keep these fish out of the Great Lakes has happened a little bit further west, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois. I mean, is it more likely that commercial fishing would take hold there first?
Yeah, so a lot of the effort right now has been concentrated on the Des Plaines River, which is just to the east of the northern Mississippi River. So the fish have been making their way up from the south where they accidentally got released over decades. And now they're up moving north and east, and the Des Plaines River is where there are a number of pools that the fishermen fish on into the Mississippi. Down in Kentucky, the fish have sort of branched off in that direction as well, and there's a pretty thriving fishery down there as well.
In the course of your reporting, did you run into any biologists who had a sense of how many Asian carp commercial fishers would have to pull to make a dent in the population? The overriding concern here is how they're affecting the ecosystems and their sort of interruption of the food chain in the Great Lakes.
I never heard any specific numbers, but there is evidence, again, for example, with the fish size and weight of what's remaining that show that the it's called the biomass, just the sheer amount of fish in these pools of the rivers are being reduced significantly and are probably lessening the pressure towards Lake Michigan.
That's amazing. You know, some fish have gone through rebranding. I'm thinking of the Slimehead's rebirth as Orange Ruffy, which landed it straight on a lot of American plates, or the Patagonian toothfish celebrated renaming as the Chilean sea bass. Did you talk to anyone who thinks that the Asian carp is going to need a new name to get taken seriously on American tables?
The Illinois Department of Natural Resources right now is working with charter fishermen, working with restaurateurs, working with a lot of bigwig marketing folks on just that effort. They want to do some sort of a major rebranding to something that sounds much more palatable to people. They're planning a big rollout of whatever the new name is. They're keeping it under wraps right now. There's a big seafood conference in Boston in mid-July, and I guess Illinois is going to roll out this new name in June in anticipation of that.
What about the Greater Lake Punchki?
The Greater Lake Punchki. Well, anything is possible, and probably anything is going to work that doesn't involve the word carp.
Keith Matheny is a reporter with the Detroit Free Press. Keith, thanks for the story, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we're getting into terminology, and specifically, the reasons why the way we talk about invasive carp species matters. Stick around.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
So we've been referring to invasive carp as Asian carp. But after we talked with Keith Matheny, we got some feedback about why this is not really the best term. The thing is, the phrase Asian carp is not just dated, it's actually inaccurate and biased. Here to talk about this is Lester Graham of the Environment Report and the Michigan Radio Newsroom, and Rachel Ishikawa, Michigan Radio's podcast producer. Rachel, Lester, how you doing?
Just fine.
Good.
Hey, Lester, we should first explain that the term Asian carp is misleading. I mean, I didn't realize this wasn't a scientific term. It's a grouping of invasive species. Can you tell us about the invasive group as a whole?
Right. And so there are four fish that we consider part of this group, the bighead carp, the black carp, the grass carp, the silver carp. And, you know, we in media like to have short-term labels, and so Asian carp has been used. It's used by the scientists, too. But, you know, if you're interested in specificity, you really need to look at each fish because each fish presents a different kind of threat. And I think that's important if we're going to be accurate in making sure people understand what's going on.
Hey, Rachel, this whole conversation kicked off with something you said. Can you tell more about how it lands with you when you hear somebody say that?
I mean, I think that there are social implications as well as scientific. So when we talk about invasive species, it tends to have a negative connotation. And with that, you know, if we're using a place of origin to describe an invasive species, I think it does have the potential to spur like some kind of bias against that specific place. And we can actually see that, you know, through example, you know, just looking at this past year, it's been made abundantly clear that the words that we use really do matter and have a significant social impact. So nationally, you know, this past year, we've seen hate crimes against Asian American folks spike. And it's really hard not to attribute that to some of the widespread xenophobic and anti-Asian rhetoric that's used around talking about the coronavirus. And even before that, you know, this isn't new. That the words that we use have social implications. In Michigan's own history, when jobs started moving to China, auto industry jobs, Vincent Chin in 1982 was murdered by two white auto workers who, you know, were feeling the brunt of that, of the industry globalizing. So I think that there are some direct, you know, social implications of these words.
I mean, I was pretty dismayed myself when I got to thinking about the fact that I would never say China flu to describe COVID, but how many times I had used the phrase Asian carp on air. Rachel, have you had to have this conversation with many people, either just people you know or colleagues, about why language is important?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, definitely with friends and family. But this all kind of spurred because of a couple years back when there were growing numbers of what were called Japanese beetles coming to the U.S. They're like ladybugs. They look like ladybugs, but they're orange.
Yeah, they love roses. I know. I had to pick off a lot of them.
Exactly. Yeah. They're, you know, just, it was in the news. It was being talked about, and I kept feeling kind of this twinge, like this anger. When hearing about it, because it was always talked about in like a negative light, and it just felt personal for some reason, which felt really strange because, you know, we're talking about these beetles. So I think that there are, yeah, that was kind of my first interaction with thinking about this in a personal way.
Sure. Lester, the phrase has become so ubiquitous when we talk about the risks posed to the Great Lakes by invasive species. Do you think listeners and readers who do care about these issues are in a place where they're ready to make a shift?
I think if they understand the issue better, you know, there's a point of irony in all of this. There has been a carp in the Great Lakes since the late 19th century. It's called the common carp, but the irony is it originated in Asia. But nobody calls it an Asian carp. It's the common carp because it is so many of them throughout the world. It's been imported to just about every big water area because it grew fast. It was people like to eat it. People don't like it as much today as they did, say, 100 years ago. But it's everywhere, and that's why it's called common carp. And now we've got this big head carp, this black carp, this grass carp, silver carp. If you ask somebody about, I'll use the phrase Asian carp today, they're going to say, oh, the one that jumps out of the water. Well, no, they don't all jump out of the water. I mean, the big head carp and the silver carp do because when they feel vibration in the water, they think it's a predator and they jump out. But the black carp, the grass carp don't do that. And the grass carp, frankly, is the biggest threat to the Great Lakes. It's a voracious eater of aquatic vegetation, eats about 40% of its body weight per day. So that one's a really big concern. And the other ones are going to be their own nuisances. But the thing is, each of these fish represents a different kind of threat to the Great Lakes. And we need to understand and not lump them together.
Guys, we want to thank you for kicking off this conversation with us. And from here on out, it's invasive carp for the purposes of this show. Rachel, Lester, thanks for stopping in.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find more of Stateside online at michiganradio.org. And don't forget to rate us and review us. It really helps other people find us and find out about what we're doing. The executive producer of Stateside is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Our theme music is by 14KT with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you next week.